Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Bet it's been a while since you've thought about Nigeria. We'll try to change that this hour, because after years of enduring one military coup or another, Nigeria now has elected leadership. But the continent's most populous country faces the threat of breaking apart along ethnic and religious lines. The U.S. ambassador to Nigeria joins us in just a minute. Later on this hour, the CEO of Whole Foods Market got in trouble the other day when he called President Obama's health care reform fascist during an interview on NPR's Morning Edition. John Mackey had agreed to appear on this program today, but canceled. Instead, we'll bring you his co-author of the new book, Conscious Capitalism, Liberating the Heroic Spirit of Business, which is a bold defense of the free enterprise system. The two claim that, to the contrary, capitalism is not a zero-sum game of greed at the expense of others. But first up, Nigeria, a nation where half of its massive population lives in poverty. Joining me is the U.S. ambassador to Nigeria, Terrence McCauley, who's in town to visit with the International Relations Council. And, Mr. Ambassador, welcome to Kansas City. So nice to have you.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here.
Well, what brings you to Kansas City?
I'm here with a delegation of Nigerian businessmen. We came to Ag Connect. It's all about trying to interest and build networks with Nigerian business people to buy good American products and services.
You're also here with this program, Doing Business in Africa campaign that was launched in November by the U.S. Department of Commerce. Tell us about that.
The idea is to build upon President Obama's National Export Initiative to double exports in 5 years, but to really educate American business about the challenges and opportunities of doing business in what is really one of the great emerging markets in the world today.
And why is it an emerging market?
Well, I think it's a place that American business hasn't thought about a lot, and certainly Nigeria, I think, is a poster child for that. It presents significant challenges for American business, but significant opportunities beyond what we normally think of in Nigeria, the oil sector.
And African economies are growing at a remarkable clip. In fact, some folks say that's really the booming place to be in the years to come.
Absolutely. And if you look at Nigeria, over the last 5 years, they've had 7% growth. Beyond the oil and gas sector, it's 8% growth. And so if you look at the global economy and the worldwide recession, that's pretty good.
Do you sense that some businesses now are beginning to pick up on all this and look to Africa for potential markets and potential growth?
Absolutely. And I think that American business is interested in Nigeria, recognizing that there's a history of corruption, there's a history of lack of rule of law. But I think that they see opportunities there, and we're trying to encourage that.
I was going to say, when a lot of people think about Africa and that massive continent, they think about underdevelopment, they think about massive poverty, they sometimes think about violence. What should they be thinking about?
I think they should look at it as a place that presents enormous opportunities, not only to help Africa develop market economies and consolidate democratic institutions, but as a place where these countries can really be good partners. Nigeria, for instance, is United States' most important strategic partner on the African continent. We look to Nigeria to help us on a variety of peace and security issues, not only in Africa, but beyond.
Why is Nigeria this country's best strategic partner in Africa? What's that about?
Well, look, it's the largest country in Africa, as you pointed out. One in five Africans is Nigerian. And if you look at crises in Africa over the last 15 years, from Liberia to Sierra Leone to Cote d'Ivoire, recently in Mali, Nigeria as a regional powerhouse has stepped up, has contributed peacekeepers, has been part of the solution, both diplomatic and in terms of deploying peacekeepers.
You know, a lot of folks listening probably don't have much sense of Nigeria. I'm not sure I do. Tell us about it. Big country. Give us a little tour of it. What should we know about Nigeria?
160 million people, roughly evenly divided between 80 million Muslims and 80 million Christians, 250 different ethnic groups, 500
wow.
different languages and dialects.
500.
500.
And you know how many of those?
I know English. And sometimes I struggle with that.
Yeah. Don't we both? What else about the country?
Well, it's a country that I think from the beginning of its history has recognized that it's a player regionally, it's a player on the African continent, and it wants to exercise its role in being part of the solution. And certainly in peacekeeping operations, it's the largest contributor of peacekeepers in Africa, 5,000 deployed worldwide from Darfur to Haiti.
What's it look like?
The country itself.
Yeah.
Well, it verges from subtropical in the south up to fairly dry Sahelian space in the north. But it's a country that has enormous natural resources, rivers, good irrigation, 84 million hectares of arable land. It's a place where companies can look, agribusiness can look for opportunities. It's a place that is filled with a very diverse and warm and welcoming people.
Hmm. Why do so many folks live in Nigeria? Why is so much of Africa's population based in Nigeria?
Well, Lagos is one of the largest cities on the African continent. It's the commercial center of West Africa. And so it's a place that historically has had a large population with respect to surrounding nations.
Now, Mr. Ambassador, you were once a kid from Medford, Oregon. How did you wind up in Nigeria?
I've often asked myself that question. Growing up in Oregon, I always wanted to do something internationally. Was pleased to be able to join the State Department and started my career next door in Niger, a French-speaking former French colony. And decided that I liked the challenges of working in Africa, and so went from one country to another and then wound up near the end of my career in the most important country in Africa.
Well, what was so appealing about Africa? What grabbed you about it?
I think it's the opportunity to see real change. I started in Africa in 1985, where the number of functioning democracies you could count on the fingers of one hand, and look at the changes we've seen in Africa over the last 25 years. Development of market economies, the consolidation of democratic institutions. And I think it's a place where the United States, through its various development programs, is really making a difference. You can see how you are effecting change and how you are contributing to national development priorities.
And yet, when you talk about this country that you're serving, Nigeria, the poverty level is extraordinary, you know, such high poverty rates. What's behind that and how is that changing?
Historically, it's a huge problem, and unfortunately, the most impoverished regions are in the north and the northeast, some of the poorest places in Nigeria. But it's a result of bad governance, of neglect. We saw a prolonged period of military rule. We've seen a collapse of a diversified economy and a collapse of the ag sector as a business, because of a focus too much on oil and gas. And so I think that the current government, which is looking to diversify its economy beyond oil and gas, is looking for opportunities to create jobs and help lift people out of poverty.
How much success is the government seeing on that front?
Well, I think there have been some successes, notably in the power reform program. But government needs to do more. Government needs to look at key areas like public health, like education, particularly primary education, and begin to devote the enormous resources that are available to it because of the oil revenue in rebuilding basic social service structures to make government relevant in people's lives and to help lift them out of poverty.
But why hasn't that happened yet? Is this too much turmoil within the government to allow for that kind of focus? Again, given the oil revenues, you think Nigeria would be in a different place.
Bad governance and corruption.
And
that's really unfortunate that in Nigeria, for instance, in the 60s, it was food self-sufficient. Nigeria held significant positions in agricultural commodities. But as the oil sector developed and the focus went entirely to that, these sectors were allowed to lapse. 43% of Nigeria's GDP is from agriculture, but it's principally subsistence farming. And far too many resources have been diverted, frankly stolen. And so the new government that was elected in 2011 needs to really commit itself to ending corruption, ending this culture of impunity, beginning to develop the enormous natural resources that Nigeria possesses for the good of its populace.
How tough of a task is it for the new government to deal with a problem as sweeping and as searing, I guess, as corruption on the scale that you're talking about?
It's difficult. I liken Nigeria to a heavily laden oil tanker, and if it's going to change course, you can't do it on the turn of a dime. It takes some time. It takes political will. And I think, to its credit, the government of President Goodluck Jonathan has said that it's committed to ending corruption. The nominations to some of Nigeria's important anti-corruption institutions have been good ones. But government needs to do more. There needs to be prosecution of people in the private sector and public sector who are stealing.
We're visiting with Terrence McCauley, the U.S. ambassador to Nigeria. How much aid does Nigeria get from this country? And I'm wondering, given the corruption, how much that money is going to where it's supposed to be going?
I'm proud of the work that we're doing in Nigeria. The largest component of our assistance is a $500 million president's emergency plan for AIDS relief, PEPFAR, which is going to treatment and prevention and education. We have local partners. We have international partners. And I'm satisfied that the work that we're doing with the resources that we've been given by Congress and the American people is working to diminish the problem in Nigeria. We have another $200 million through USAID and other organizations, again, working with oversight from U.S. government officials, but working with local partners in education and in public health, helping to jumpstart the agricultural sector. And I'm satisfied the work we're doing is good work. It's achieving results, and it's not being diverted.
How important is it that we give that money to Nigeria, given, again, Nigeria's relative wealth with its oil-backed resources?
I think it's important that we be there as a donor. I think it's important, too, that the government of Nigeria step up, and they need to do more, particularly in public health, particularly with our PEPFAR program. We have negotiated a framework agreement which would step up Nigeria's contributions to our common effort. I'd like to see them more committed to deliver resources. And I agree with you completely. This is a country that has abundant natural resources, and they should have the ability to be a real partner, and they need to do more.
Mr. Ambassador, this notion, we talked a minute ago about schools and how the education system just isn't what it should be. I'm wondering, you know, what percentage of the kids over there aren't in school, aren't going at all, and what does that bode for the future?
It varies really by region. And if you look at the Southwest, you have a high percentage of children who are in school, high literacy rates, 70-80%. But if you look at the most impoverished part of Nigeria, in the Northeast, for instance, 65% of the kids between the ages of 6 and 15 have never seen the inside of a classroom. And that
presents 65%.
So Nigeria needs to do more. The Nigerian government at the local, state, and federal level needs to recognize that they're creating a demographic problem by not educating its citizenry, by not developing a lifetime literacy and numeracy. And in the north, for instance, you see young people who may not subscribe to this extremist ideology of this group called Boko Haram, but are being used to commit acts of violence because they have nothing better to do.
We have this email here from Manny. Mr. Ambassador, the security issues in Nigeria are paramount to economic development in that country. What steps can the U.S. government help Nigeria in achieving this goal?
It's a great question, and I agree with him. If you look at, again, the northern part of the country, which is the most impoverished, you have a security situation over the last 3 years where an extremist insurgency has been increasingly lethal, increasingly sophisticated. 3,000 people have been killed. A year ago in Kano, 200 people were killed.
And who's behind that insurgency?
It's a group called Boko Haram, which means Western education is forbidden. It's a multi-headed group, and they've principally been conducting these acts of terror. And the United States wants to be a partner. We've been working with the Nigerians to help them learn, frankly, from our lessons before 9/11, where our security and intelligence services were not coordinating effectively. We've said, here are some examples of what we've done to help you coordinate better. We're also trying to help them understand that it's not just a security problem, that it's really important to go after these extremists, to identify leadership and to capture, to detain, to prosecute, but that it's broader than that. We believe and have said to the Nigerians that they need a more holistic approach that looks at development, that looks at the underlying grievances, that looks at how you strategically communicate to these populations who feel that the government is largely irrelevant in their lives because it doesn't provide school and education, how the transformation agenda of President Jonathan is going to deliver power and infrastructure and roads and schools.
And when you deliver messages like that, how are those messages received? Are you listened to? Do you think are you being acknowledged? Are your points being acted upon?
It's a work in progress, frankly. We have a very high-level bilateral dialogue with the government of Nigeria through our binational commission. It is a topic for virtually every meeting. It's a topic of virtually every meeting that I have with the leadership of Nigeria, from the president to the vice president to the national security advisor.
I was going to say, how often do you see the president?
I see the president probably a couple of times a year. I see his senior advisors, his national security advisor, pretty much when we need to. I think that there are parts of President Jonathan's government that understand that it needs to be a broad-based strategy. I think there are others who don't get it. And so as a friend, as a partner, the United States is obliged, I think, to carry that message and to repeat it.
We're talking about the conditions in Nigeria with the U.S. Ambassador to Nigeria, Terrence McCauley. If you want to join our conversation, our phone number here, 816-235-2888, our email address, update@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. I'm wondering about your own security, Mr. Ambassador, given events of recent months involving this country around the world. How secure do you feel there, given this insurgency you were talking about in the north? What's it like?
I feel very secure. We have a great security team at the U.S. mission. We have great partnership with the Nigerian security forces. And so personally, I feel very safe. Security of my personnel, security of American citizens in Nigeria is my highest priority. And so that's a constant monitoring that we need to do to make sure that we're giving the best possible advice to Americans about avoiding areas where they could perhaps come into danger.
How well protected is your residence there, and how's that work?
It's well protected. We have local guards. We have local security forces. We have a new embassy that was commissioned in 2005, according to the post-Nairobi security standards.
And it's in good shape.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to ask about the confidence in President Jonathan that you were talking about before. How is he held by citizens in that country? What kind of faith do folks have in him? What do you think of him?
I think he came into office with enormous hope and a very ambitious agenda for change. And I think that to some extent, the very qualities that endeared him to the Nigerian electorate in 2011, presenting as a very un-Nigerian leader, someone who was soft-spoken, who seemed very humble, also very educated. He's got a PhD in zoology. Have not perhaps translated as well as they might in terms of leading this very difficult nation to a difficult period in its history with a very ambitious agenda. But I think that he is seconded by some key reformers in his government, in finance, in agriculture, in trade and investment, the attorney general. He has good people. I think he needs to articulate his agenda, which is a laudable one, and then demonstrate by actions against corruption, addressing the security questions, creating a more propitious investment climate. I think he needs to be a bit more active in communicating how his transformation agenda is really going to affect the daily lives of Nigerians and then show progress.
Well, that's a pretty hefty agenda. It sounds like you have questions about him.
No, I think he's a solid leader and he's got good people around him. But you're right. It is a very ambitious agenda, and it's almost there are so many priorities. Where do you start? And I think he's correct in focusing initially on the power sector, because if you're going to diversify your economy outside of oil and gas, if you're going to create a manufacturing base, you've got to get power right. Nigeria, on a good day, produces 4,000 megawatts of electricity. This is a country of 160 million people. By example, South Africa, a country a third the size, produces 48,000 megawatts of electricity. It's just not enough. And I think they've made progress on power. I'm satisfied that there is movement on privatization of power, and that, I think, bodes well for other parts of the agenda.
But, boy, the agenda sounds like a steep one. I mean, lots of fundamental building block kinds of concerns and needs in that country right now.
No, you're absolutely right, Steve. It's ambitious, but progress in power, progress on the fight against corruption means that you can see real change in Nigeria.
Now, I'm wondering what citizens there think of President Barack Obama. What do they make of him?
He is extraordinarily popular in Nigeria. I would say that he is held in high esteem. Nigerians were disappointed that President Obama went to Ghana in 2009. They'd like him to come to Nigeria. But they really see him as someone who has changed the face of America, first African-American president, son of a Kenyan father. They really see him as someone they can identify with.
I mean, did his election catch them off guard in some sense, this notion of an African-American president in the most powerful country in the world?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I wasn't in Nigeria in 2008 when President Obama was elected, but yeah. Certainly from what we saw in 2012 in the campaign and the election, I don't think it surprised Nigerians. I think it actually made them feel proud of the United States as a country that overcome our own issues to elect the first African-American president.
You know, Mr. Ambassador, you have some history in your own background with Mali, a country just to the north of the country we're talking about here, Nigeria. Just the other day, as a lot of folks know, Nigeria sent troops and warplanes to Mali to assist the Mali government in fighting the Northern Islamic Rebellion. Give us an update on what's happening there and the potential, I guess, for this conflict escalating into something far larger.
Well, certainly the African response to the Malian crisis, Nigeria certainly was part of that. The decision of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, to, first of all, condemn the coup, second, to commit forces to help the Malian army restore its territorial integrity. Nigeria was an important part of that. They have about 150 troops in Bamako now as part of a forward headquarters unit. Eventually, there are going to be about 3,300 African troops from a number of countries of the ECOWAS region and beyond who will be participating in that. It's important that Malian territorial integrity be restored. It's important that these extremist groups be pushed out of the cities.
And the concern with the extremist groups is what? Who are they? Who do you think they are?
Well, we know one. It's a group called Al-Qaeda and the Islamic Maghreb. In the early 2000s, it was called the Salafist Group for Preaching in Combat. It's an Algerian group that was pushed out of Algeria and, in fact, was in northern Mali for a number of years. It was reinforced after the fall of Gaddafi by fighters who came from Libya. There are other breakaway groups. There is additionally a couple of ethnic Tuareg groups which were affiliated with the insurgency for a while but have since broken away. So it's a complicated situation, but you've got a core group of committed jihadists.
How was the decision to send troops there from Nigeria? How was that received by the Nigerians?
I think that Nigeria recognizes and Nigerians recognize that if there is a regional crisis, Nigeria needs to step up. And despite significant challenges domestically on the security front, I think Nigerians are proud that their country once again is contributing.
And the concern here is that if this situation is not dealt with, the potential for the creation of a safe haven for terrorists in Mali is fairly high.
Absolutely. And I think that is why when the French intervened a few weeks ago, Africans unanimously supported this, recognizing that it was going to take time to deploy the African troops, equip, train, get them ready to support the Malian army to retake the north. And so the French intervention was very much welcomed.
Nigeria is also attempting to tackle the world's worst lead poisoning outbreak, which has killed at least 400 children. But the government has been accused of not responding quickly enough. What's happening on that front, and why was the government slow to respond?
I think it's a number of factors. Certainly the international community responded, the United States among others, UNICEF, WHO, deploying to, as you've accurately characterized, the worst lead poisoning outbreak in history. Government, again, it's a public health issue, and frankly, I don't think they devote enough resources to public health. I think that the federal government needs to support the state of Zamfara in the remediation effort. It needs to coordinate its efforts better because part of the problem is that it crosses from the Ministry of Mines to the Ministry of Environment to the Ministry of Health, and so it's a coordination issue.
You know, before you leave, Mr. Ambassador, again, help us picture this country a little bit. What's your favorite spot in Nigeria? Is there a place you like to go, a place that has sort of loomed large in your imagination over the years?
Steve, you're going to get me in trouble with my Nigerian friends. Calabar is a very interesting city, a very historic city in Cross River State in the south. But I have been impressed when I travel from north to south, east to west. The Nigerians are warm, welcoming, friendly, very supportive of America. And so I would say that I've been warmly received everywhere.
How about a place that you like the most? Can you describe it to us?
Well, Calabar is an interesting place. I learned it is on a channel, and apparently 33% of the Africans who made the Middle Passage in the horrible period of the slave trade departed from Calabar. There's an interesting slave museum there. It's a very picturesque site, beautiful old city. So I would say, and in fact, there's an Oregonian who works there on a drill monkey environmental project that is very good. And so I would say that's an interesting place, but I've enjoyed everywhere.
That's the U.S. Ambassador to Nigeria, Terrence McCauley. Mr. Ambassador, thank you for your time. Enjoy your time in Kansas City.
Thank you, Steve.
Again, he'll be speaking to a group with the International Relations Council this evening in town. Coming up, time for a break. When we come back, we'll talk about with the co-author of the new book, Conscious Capitalism, Liberating the Heroic Spirit of Business. The whole idea here is capitalism is not a zero-sum game of greed. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR.